have a little time and in a bit. I wrote a hit, I need to put it out, let it emanate. I'm all that every letter got abandoned like a centipede. A remedy, an enemy, a man, a mini, mini, me. Started becoming animated when the money made it dumb. I'm a man, I hate it, but I'm running unabated. And I'm rhyming up a pen, I'm rhyming in a gig. In any line, I'm bringing any man that I'm in, you can dig it. When I'm handling a crowd, then I stand up in a bow. Got I'm damning like the Panama Canal. Second to none, second I'm done. Exhaling every breath that I get in my lung. And you can dig it like a rhythm and a rhythm and adrenaline disseminating lingo. Then I'm bringing in a synonym and many men and women tend to bend to do the minimum. I get them on my pin and then I'm winning and I win again. Andy Cooper coming out of the blue like a boy named Sue saying, how do you do? I got a beat that's like bare feet on concrete. Ha! Burning out of Long Beach all the way to Zaire. I don't wanna lie here. When I get an idea, put it into high gear and ram along. Come on, if you can roll, but I'm a bag of moment. I get on to do another show. No quitting me. Never had enough. Float with a beat like an aqueduct. So quickly, let my rapper rub. No diggity. I got to bag it up. Pump a time bomb, taking the blood with the get up and go to the little middle. Man to bring the rig of my roll. I'm a rhyme on the set, going live in the wreck. On the vibe in the pit. Better dive on the deck. You wanna get the party going, anybody let me know. Cause I'm a bad man with a hammer and the mic. You need to come and see me rip it to the end of the night. I'm gonna rock, rock, out of control. With everybody going at it when I put it on the show. I've been waiting on the side for my moment to arrive. Never rocking with my people and you know we're gonna fly. Given if you want a disc, cause I audibly gotta be on the front of any list when I hit him like throw on my jab, random days by the phrase that I wrote on my pad, coming with a right. Knock you out, I keep bringing the pain to the end of the bout. My lips are the lighter, igniting the wick that I lit when I spit all the fire. And there can never be another imitating me when I kick an analytical and hit it, baby D. I'm light skinned, enigmatic, and I never get erratic. And I love a second of the cinematic when I'm at it. I can take a bit of predicate to whip it into shipping and integrate a group of on a ventilator. At any rate, I got him on the ropes in a day. Stoked in a maze that I broke from the cage. Talking really fast, see your hair's pulled back like a rockabilly cat. Take cover, shoot from the hips. Make a wave like a lunar eclipse. On the night till you're black and your blue is the crisp. Doing top 10 for goof in the mix. I come through with a head of steam. Designing a rhyming scheme. Mr. Bravado, aficionado. Grip on the mic that I rip like a throttle. Fast on the rap, that's on and on. Fast like driving on an Autobahn. Fast all day like Ramadan. I'm holding the muffin and becoming a phenomenon. Cause I jam like nobody can. I'm the man with the plan like Cobra Command or Tony Montana. Go my banana, scope on the land on the boat from a man. I'm man, I'm badge of the bone, standing alone. Coming with the number one, handmade a bone in the zone. In the zone, I'ma cool my favorite song. Benita, I'm a bomb, you gotta put me on. Benita, 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 Ina, gotta DeVita. If you're not a believer, then meet Mina, Mina, Mina. Man, I couldn't be timid, I live in the minute. You better run and quit in the minute. I'm living it over the limit when I rock. Ready to roll. You wanna get the party going, anybody let me know. Cause I'm a bad man when they hand me the mic. You need to come and see me rip it till the end of the night. I'm gonna rock, rock, out of control. Everybody going at it when I put it on the show. I've been waiting
how
on the side
on earth, how on earth do they do it? How do they sing and rap so quickly? Sarah Louise Connolly, this is your playlist. It's 102.5 FM Sound Art Radio. I'm Julie Mullen, K Cole Show, with you for 1 hour of crazy, crazy wonderfulness. Poetry, art, string quartets, witches, you name it, we've got it. Are you ready to roll? I am, if you are.
Good night.
Goodness. Wow. Thank you. That was the Allergies. I have never heard of a band called the Allergies, and trust Sarah Louise Connolly to introduce me to them. And as we do our thing. So hello to you. Are you piping hot? Or are you like me and you've got the shutters closed? You're in a very cool, beautifully green room, actually, sort of minty almost. So I'm broadcasting from home, which is incredibly lucky because I think that the studio over there in Dartington might be a bit tad hot. Anyway, last week I broadcast from another studio in Totnes, which was a little bit hot, but also we lost our connection at on the front of the show, so we had to go to a hot spot, but it was great. Anyway, I'm back home. So today we have the rather marvelous artist, multidisciplinary. I find that really tricky to say, but I managed to deliver it. Sophie Herxheimer coming on our program today, and our Sarah Louise Connolly, our roving reporter, is chatting with a witch. Oh. Let's have something a little bit witchy. to get you in the mood. It's the clapping song.
369, the goose drank wine, the monkey chewed it back on the streetcar line. The line broke, the monkey got choked. They all went to heaven in a literal boat. Clap that, clap that, clap that, clap, clap, clap that. Clap your hand, pat it on your partner's ham, right hand. Clap pat, clap your hand, cross it with your left.
A little bit of the clapping song for you to get you in the mood for a witch. And later on in the programme, we have Mr. Steve Nyer, recently returned from Mauritius, to talk about his art and teaching out there. How glamorous is that? Martin Seeger will be on the programme talking about his debut on Wednesday at Ashburton Arts and a string quartet that he's writing for. Woohoo! So we have got so much to share with you. Let's get Sarah Louise Connolly. Are you ready? Are you ready?
You put the beans up in the grinder. You
She's
put
ready.
The beans, goddammit, in the grinder. You put the beans in the grinder. You pop the beans up inside the grinder. You grind it up. And then you put a little grounds in the filter. You put the coffee gown down in the filter. And then you put the filter up in the top of the coffee maker. Gotta get that drip. Gotta drip, 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 a drip, a drip, a drip, drip, drip. Got to drip, a drip, a drip, drip, drip. Gotta drip, baby, drip. Then you put it in your cup.
Oh, thank you, Mark, for that intro. I do love the way that Julie says that he's my backing band, that he's supporting me. Not really the case, but we do love Mark. Right then, today I am under a shady tree out in the middle of nowhere, talking to one of the most interesting people that I know from around Totnes, and by far one of the most wonderful, and she is a witch, and her name is Kate, aka the Witch Wench. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning.
How did you become aware and first interested in witchcraft?
So I was 8 when my mum told me that we are related to the Pendle Witches, which is the famous group of witches who were the last people to be hung in Pendle in Yorkshire. So I started with the history of witchcraft, and then it's progressed from there onto practicing and a lot of books, mostly books. And then I babysat for a lady when I was about 12 who had been a high priestess in a coven, and she taught me a lot. But
oh, wow.
Walked a solitary path.
Could you give us an example of a really basic positive ritual that like anybody could perform?
The best one that I do is working with the moon. So any full moon or new moon, I like to use bay leaves, but you can use paper. So just write down on a full moon 3 things that you want to let go of, or on a new moon 3 things that you would like to draw towards you, and then burn them or throw them in the river.
Oh, that's a good one. Now, yeah, I was just about to say, my next thing that I'd scribbled down here was that witchcraft is very linked to the moon. What's currently happening with the moon and how may it be affecting our feelings and our lives right now?
So we've just had the super full moon in, was it Capricorn? Yeah, in Capricorn. So Capricorn energy is all about, I'm just trying to think back to my notes now. Change.
Unveiling, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, that's more, there's a Neptune retrograde right now, so for the next 6 months, there's going to be a lot of unveiling as we move through summer into the winter. But we are currently in the waning phase of the moon, so it's all about letting go of maybe things that haven't come to fruition for you, that have been frustrating, and making space for good things to come. There's a lot about being accountable and holding yourself accountable for things that haven't gone well.
All right.
Accountability is a big word that came up. Also pruning. So this time of year, like, it's great, we're in the growing season, it's time to relax and enjoy summer. It's the of the four seasons, it's the one that's a bit more chill. But there's a sense of pruning, there's a sense of cutting away any things that don't serve you.
Yeah.
Trim here and there.
For those people that are interested in this and they want to learn more about witchcraft, they could subscribe to, you do a blog, don't you?
I do. I have a blog. I have a website, which is thewitchwench.com. You can also find me on Instagram. There's a load of free content on there. I believe that knowledge should be free. So most of what I put out is free. All of the astrology posts, there's some basic rituals. You can also subscribe, which is only £2.50, less than the cost of a pint.
Brilliant.
And
you also make these scent sticks. What can you tell us a bit about them?
The scent sticks. So smoke cleansing is something that's done across many cultures. So it's burning herbs, traditionally sage, but white sage is actually sacred to Native Americans. So unless you're a Native American, no white sage for you. Mine use native plants. All have different magical correspondences, so it's almost like a recipe that I put together. Each one is
all
a
right.
spell.
Yep.
So they cleanse negativity, they all do that, but different ones intended to welcome in different things.
So what are some of the local herbs that you would put in there?
Well, I grow sage in my garden, so but it's British sage. Mugwort mm-hmm. is a great one. Mugwort's like our native version of sage.
Right.
So you have things like mint attracts luck and money, calendula for healing. Mugwort's just great for anything to do with women or banishing or strength or protection.
So you weave these together and put some intentions into them as you're doing them.
Yes, so mine are wrapped layer by layer, and then as I'm making them, I'm consciously adding my own energy to it, and the intention is what they're designed for, what their purpose is, so you speak that to them. And a lot of the ones that you buy, it's just like a bundle of rosemary, whereas mine are wrapped. They take about an hour to make each mm-hmm. one, depending on the size.
So quite time consuming. Mm. And then where could if I wanted to buy one of these, where could I get one?
So I've just started with the Totnes Craft Collective. So if you're in Totnes, you could find us outside St Mary's Church on Thursdays, every Thursday. We also have a few other ones dotted around. So we're going to be in the Old Bakehouse Monday, and then the Shady Garden. You can also come direct to me, and I do also do commissioned ones, so I can make one for just about anything that you need.
Brilliant. So we could buy one of these, take it home, burn it, do some cleansing, set out our intentions. Brilliant. Now, in the past, witches were burnt at the stake, and in fairy tales, they were always portrayed as evil, weren't they? Mm. However, the actual reality is very different, isn't it?
It is. Witches were canny women, we were healers. Generally, a hedge witch doesn't mean like living in the hedges, although you'll often find me in there. It means living on the edges. So we lived on the edges of society. We were healers, we were midwives, people would come to us for all sorts of things. Also, there's a big thing about serving your community. A witch is just a job title, really.
Yeah, because you're holding these sort of women's groups at the moment, aren't you?
I do. I'm doing women's circles, and I'm also doing very basic rituals on the Sabbath, just trying to bring together more community and awaken the witchcraft in everybody.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for your time and this insight into the fascinating world of witchcraft. Right, back to you in the studio, Julie.
So sorry.
Yeah. You put the coffee, you put the beans up in the grinder. You put the beans, goddammit, in the grinder. You put the beans in the grinder. You pop the beans up inside the grinder. You grind it up. And then you put a little grounds in the filter. You put the coffee down in the filter. And then you put the filter up in the top of the coffee maker.
Our roving reporter, Sarah Louise Connolly, talking to the witch wench. And that's Mark Ribelet, who supports her every single week when she's doing her roving reporting. We are so excited to have all these different aspects to the programme. We've got Sophie, we've got Steve Nye, we've got Martin. We've just had Kate, the witch wench. Definitely going to buy one of those scent sticks. In fact, I put it on Facebook this morning because they're so beautiful. And it takes her an hour to make this. I'm definitely getting one. So let's have a little bit of music and bring Sophie on. Oh, what should we play? Oh, I don't know. Oh, yes, this one.
You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away. The other night, dear, as I lay sleeping, I dreamed I held you in my arms. When I awoke, dear, I was mistaken, so I hung my head and cried. You are my sunshine, my sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away.
Oh, what a beautiful song that is, or it was rather, Christina Perry. And You Are My Sunshine. Let's read a little bit from Sophie's website. Okay, so Bidisha from BBC Arts Online said, Herxheimer is a prolific multidisciplinary artist whose own poetry is fiercely energetic, erudite and punchy. Her work on Voyage combines her lush, apparently boundless artistic style with a personal gentleness and generosity. How brilliant. Now, if you go to Sophie's website, you'll see all sorts. I mean, this person, I just can't wait to get her on the phone because she is just able to create seemingly anything. She illustrated 5 fairy tale collections, made several artist books, created a 300-meter tablecloth to run the length of Southwark Playhouse, featuring hand-printed food stories from 1,000 Londoners, narrated an episode of the food programme from Margate, made a life-size concrete poem in the shape of Mrs. Beaton, sited next to her grave, and a pie big enough for 7 drama students to jump out of. Oh, my goodness. Seriously. Check her out. Now, on the 14th of August, Sophie Herxheimer is coming to Totnes. She really is. She's coming here to our shores and running a fantastic workshop at the Albatross, which is actually literally a hop, skip and a jump away from where I'm located. So I've actually already signed up for it. Are you coming? I hope so. So, right, I'm going to get some... What should we have? Some intro music. Oh, this is some face music. Well, it's not her music. It's actually Sarah Louise Connolly's, but this is her intro song. El Choco and Pepe Jamilio. I probably mispronounced that, so apologies to that band. Let's get her on, for goodness sake. We've got a ringer on this thing, haven't we? Right. She's going to come on, hopefully. Oh.
Can you... Good morning.
Ah, good morning, Sophie, and welcome to 102.5 FM Sound Art Radio. I've given them all the blurb about you, and everyone is quivering with anticipation.
Oh.
I've just been reading out from your website, and that Mrs. Beaton's thing, that's absolutely, I mean, talk about multidisciplinary. You seemingly can do anything, and flagged up very much about the workshop that you'll be leading. So let's jump right into the workshop that's happening on August the 14th, 10 to 1. Tell me all about it. What will you be doing with us?
Well, I shall be bringing an enormous bag of really exciting scraps that I've been hoarding for years, because I have lots of bags of scraps, and they are very, very based in colour and texture, and also text itself, because I've been like so attracted to using other people's words, especially from instructional books like recipe books or how-to mm-hmm. books, and making them into poems, and even making them into little books, and even making them into a massive pack of prophetic tarot cards.
Wow.
So I like using material that I find, because sometimes it's really great to do that when you are lost for words yourself, which I think some of us are at the moment. You can use really old-fashioned rubbish books that say terrible things, but in beautiful phrases.
Yeah.
And just reassign the phrases to saying something you'd actually like to say. And that's one of the things we'll be doing in the workshop. We'll be making little books. We'll be making them as decorative and joyful and deranged as we want.
You've just hit the key word that's made me feel very excited about this. You've just said the deranged word. So at least 20 people have just signed up after the D word was exposed.
Oh, good. Yeah, because I think that rational thinking in education is very much sort of overemphasised, and imaginative thinking is, I think, where we all need to go. Nearly all the time.
Yeah.
And fighting logic with our own poetry logic is a really good way to kind of spontaneously create things without necessarily feeling that you have to worry about whether it's good, bad or indifferent, because you don't. And it never is indifferent in the end, because if you make it, then something is happening, and that just makes me excited and hopefully encourages other people. So the workshop's really about collage poetry, but poetry is a very off-putting word, so I tend to just emphasize the art side of it and the playing side of it.
Yeah, and you know, you're absolutely right. I want to sort of hear those words sent out into the universe so many times, because you just said it. You said, you know, it's about the making of it, and therefore it's about that magic, and to leave your critical head outside the door, because I know from my own perspective, I make something and I'm like, oh no, look at it. And there's all that critical stuff steps in. And I want to...
It's not very useful, is it? Using your critical mind at the same time as your hand.
No.
I always think that the hand and the eye and the critical mind should be used quite separately from each other, if possible. And, I mean, hand and eye are okay, but critical mind may be sent on quite a long holiday with other people's critical mind.
With biscuits.
They can have a lovely away day... listening to Face the Facts or something.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely, absolutely right. Now, I there are so many pies and pieces of fantastic information on your website that I'm almost, I don't know which pie to go to, but I think I want to go straight to your pie that is Welcome to England. England. Oh, you'll be able to say it properly.
England. Welcome to England. Yeah, thank you for mentioning it. Well, this is a poetry book that came out in 2017 with short books, and it's been reprinted last year, or was it this year? I get confused. I think it was this year. And it's featuring 30 poems and 30 paper cuts. The poems are all in my late grandmother's accent. She was a refugee in 1938 from Berlin, and she brought over with her my dad, who was 12, and my auntie, who was 10, and she had Her husband had come 6 months earlier to resit all his medical exams in English, which he did not much enjoy, but he did enjoy being able to survive. And they were rescued. He was rescued personally by A.V. Hill from the, who quickly set up this thing called the Council for Academic Refugees, which is still going and still rescuing scientists and academics from war territory and places of, you know, death. So that was, I mean, that's a very long story, which I won't tell you the full of, but I've told you quite a lot of. And my granny was amazing because she was dedicated to being incredibly ordinary about everything and not making a fuss, which is completely opposite to everyone else in my family who absolutely loves making a fuss. They all make a huge fuss about everything, including me. But my granny was a sort of different sort. She was stoical. She was like a model of not making a fussness and getting on with things and doing her garden and being trying to be English. And she would really be surprised that she had such a strong accent, but she did. So if you want me to read you
a poem in her
voice.
Yes, please.
I mean, my greatest hit from this book is the first poem that I wrote in it, and it's called London. And so I'll read that because it's just short. It's a sonnet.
Okay.
And when you see them written down, you see that they're phonetically written, and so they look quite funny and you can't really understand them. When you see them on the page, they absolutely need reading aloud. And what I was quite enjoying about writing them was that every reader is automatically made into a foreigner by having to try and decipher what I've written.
Yeah.
So this is London. Not so many days since we're arriving. This grey is like Berlin, this same grey day we have. This northern weather on the damp street. A bit of rain won't hurt. Will help the trees on this Hampstead Heath we see, in fact. Why should I mind that? I drive with the buses, Herr Conductor asking me, for what? I don't exactly remember. Fast, please? To him, my penny I hand over. He nods with a kind smile. Thanks, love, he says. Oh, I am his love. Turns handle on machine, out curls a ticket. This is when I know that here to settle is okay. This city will be home, where even on the bus is love.
Wonderful, Sophie. Now, I know the Observer said something very complimentary about this book. How can people pick it up? Is it just at the bookshops or is it on your website?
This book is, luckily for me, you know, now short books have been taken over by Hachette. I mean, short books were brilliant anyway and are brilliant, but it's very widely available. You can I mean, obviously don't buy it off the A-word website.
No.
But if you need to, you can. Otherwise, you can just order in your bookshop. It'll be there the next day.
Mm.
It's in any bookshop you care to mention. They can get it quite easily. Not like my other books, which are more obscure. Mm-hmm. Quite a lot of them, especially the ones I make in my studio and don't publish.
Do you actually sell those books?
I tell you what I do. I do sell quite a lot of weird things at some weird places, like the Book Art Bookshop in Hoxton, which sells artist books exclusively and is an absolute treasure trove. And then some rather smart bookshops, like the LRB Bookshop opposite the British Museum, stocks my tarot card collage poetry. Mm. I mean, quite a few bookshops stock that. And you could even buy it in Kingsbridge at the Red Propeller, because they have six boxes at least.
Absolutely brilliant.
Because they show my screen prints sometimes. So there's lots of ways to get hold of things from the publishers or sometimes directly from me. Certainly I can bring some stock to the workshop if people
please do.
Things.
We would love that. Absolutely. We want you to do that. Can we just go back a little to your kind of younger years? How did it all begin? Because you're very curious. You seem to have so many talents and they're spread across as multidisciplinary, as it's, you know, described on your website. How did it all start throbbing out there out of you? Were you always like that as a child?
Because I grew up in a house with a lot of colour, because my mum was a textile designer and my auntie and her used to work together often in our house when we were growing up.
Yeah.
And my auntie's still alive and still making amazing textiles, and she's called Sarah Campbell, and my mum was called Susan Collier, and they had a company called Collier Campbell, which is no longer anything to do with us or our family, but was an incredible influence because it was every day was about what colour goes next to what colour and what, how can we put this into repeat and what's an abstract and what's a floral. So I grew up in a language of visuals, not fine art, not poetry, but just a language of its own, which of course I thought was normal, like you always do things are normal that you grow up with. And so neither my sister or I are in the slightest bit scared of colour. You know, we love it. And poetry was always something that I was also very, very interested in. As a small child, I used to make books. I used to make rhyme dial. I invented this thing called a rhyme dial when I was about 7, where you had holes in bits of paper and you could dial them round and find a word that rhymed with
That's absolutely brilliant.
I peaked too early, actually. I had to give poetry up for quite a long time after I'd reached that summit. And then actually poetry sort of came flooding back into my sensibilities, partly through grief. When my mum died, I was writing a lot. I was reading poems to her when she was ill because it was a thing that we could share the delight in, that she, you know, she didn't have the strength to hold a book, but I could photocopy a poem that I loved and take it and read it to her, and she could stuff it down her bra for later.
Aww.
And it was a very bonding thing. And you know, I just got more and more serious about writing my own poetry, and, you know, gradually it's sort of slightly taken over from painting, but not really, because they just run along together. And although they often fight, you know, text and image do fight for the page, then you can let one of them win at any point, or you can find ways to make them get along, or you can just throw yourself into one and then come to the other later. But most of the work I do incorporates text and image because I'm a strange hybrid and I've decided not to fight it any longer. I used to fight it, and at art school it was awful because people say, I don't understand why you've put poems in your degree show. And I'd sort of think, no, I don't understand either. I'm so sorry.
But I love that you put poems in your degree show. So I know that you teach at the poetry school, is that right, in London?
Yeah, I sometimes teach at the poetry school, and I also teach at the Royal Drawing School. Those are my two main teaching outposts.
Okay. And what sort of work do you concentrate on at the poetry school?
Well, the last course I taught there actually was about William Blake.
Uh-huh.
And that's because he's the patron saint of image text, isn't he? So,
yeah.
And also he is a Londoner, and he was a very, I mean, nowadays he'd be labelled with all kinds of things, I imagine, rather than multidisciplinary, he'd probably just be put away. But he was somebody who models how to use your imagination in everyday life. You know, everything he looked at became part of the poem. He mentions all the different bits of London at the same time as mentioning paradise and giants. And you know, he's extremely good at connecting the scales of things. You know, the tiny insect with the enormous, incomprehensible city.
Yeah.
You know, he called London Golganooza, which is a great word. And I usually make the students say that out loud at the beginning.
Oh, brilliant.
Together. But so I talked about Blake. And then next spring, I'm teaching for the poetry school a course about, you know, translation, really. Translation between the visual and the written. And how we look at the world and what we make out of the images that come into our heads, whether they're from ourselves or other people or our families or our environments. You know, just that both poetry and painting and image making are concerned with arranging the images in a certain order and making them visible or readable. And that's a rather vague idea of what I'll be teaching there next spring, but it's something like that.
And what about the drawing school? How does that work in terms of your teaching?
I co-teach a few courses there. Very, very entertaining fun for me to work there because I work with some brilliant people who have very, what shall I say, how do you say these words? Now that I'm a poet, I've lost all the words. They have kind of complementary attitudes and disciplines to me. So we can convene like in our classes and we'll do a week each, and 1 week the students are taken off into spontaneity by me, and the next week they're taken off into structure by my colleague Emily Hayworth Booth, for example, who's brilliant at organising stories and sequences and understands how to tell a story using pictures because she's a graphic novelist. And she loves poetry. She's a great poet as well. But we have lots of kind of themes that we will sort of flood the poor students with. Ooh. And a lot of art students aren't familiar with a lot of poetry. So for me, it's a sheer joy.
Yeah.
Because I can give them poets to work with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can allocate them each a poet who I think they'll get a lot out of reading. And I can say, you're just going to make visual work. I don't want to see any words relating to this poet and their work.
That's absolutely
And then I give
brilliant.
Them these
yeah.
incredibly famous poets, like Elizabeth Bishop or, you know, Robert Creeley or Audre Lorde, and they don't know who they are, so they discover something big.
So it's kind of life-changing, potentially.
Well, I'd like to think so.
Well, it sounds it. I think it's absolutely a brilliant way in to drawing. Now, what about
It shakes it up, because a lot of the time I think people feel lost about content and they sit there going, I'd love to draw, but what shall I draw? And they're a bit bored of drawing the view from their window, although it is obviously different every time. But, you know, if you are wanting to practice and extend your own art, drawing and making, then having those outside stimulants is obviously really wonderful and
just nice
to be given them on a plate.
Can't you come and live in Totnes? We need you so desperately here.
You do not. You've got many, many creative, brilliant people there.
No, honestly, we do.
I love it. And I love Devon. And we stay in Kingsbridge a lot because that's where my auntie that I referred to earlier had this brilliant barn that now my husband and his siblings have taken over. But so we often are in and out of Devon as much as possible. And it's certainly a place that I feel very lucky to know and to hang out in.
Well,
but yeah, it's also a creative place.
It is a brilliant creative place. And I know you're based in London most of the time, but every time I've had connection with you, and I've had a few connections with you over the last weeks about this interview, you're always buzzing off somewhere. You go, oh, I'm over there, I'm doing this book show, I'm doing this, I'm off to Wales. So you're very busy. And so I feel very fortunate to have actually clicked you in one place to talk about the workshop, your life, your art, and I feel really kind of privileged, honestly, to listen to your words.
It's my privilege. Thank you for asking me. It's lovely to talk to you.
And you know, I mean, I'm just so excited about you coming on the 14th and running that workshop. And I'm sure, will you get us to say that word, please?
Oh, yeah.
Your William Blake
word. I mean, I'll think of a couple of new words so that
Great.
You get surprised.
Oh,
and
please.
Then, and also, we'll be, if we feel like it, we'll be able to read from my hoarded scraps of cut-up phrases, and you know, we'll no doubt have a great laugh, because some of these very pompous books of yesteryear, you know, that are full of colonial nonsense, are written in the most brilliant language.
Yeah.
And so hijacking their kind of high-flown phrases is just sort of like collage gold, really. And we will make each other laugh, and we will invent things, and it will be a great collective enterprise, I think.
I'm really looking forward to it, Sophie, and thank you so much for coming on the programme this morning. And
great pleasure.
And see you then.
See you then, Julie. Thanks very, very much.
Take good care now.
Hello, Totnes. I hope you're not all melting like we are.
Oh, God, yeah, we're melting. I've got the shutters. That I'm in a darkened room, so I'm okay. But I hope you'll stay very cool with your doggy.
I'm also in a darkened room, yeah, with my feet in a bucket.
Yeah, feet in a bucket is a great idea. Okay, all the very best,
okay.
Sophie. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Fantastic to connect with such a multi-talented artist. And in fact, we've got another multi-talented artist coming on the programme. Mr. Steve Nyer, shortly. And before then, we've got to talk to composer Martin Seeger about the string quartet and his fantastic piece of music that is having a debut indeed, in Ashburton at the Arts Centre. So let's have a little bit of craziness.
Don't mess with it. Woo! Stand back, let me do my shit. Woo! I'm lit. worship me.
Feel that lightning. A bit of Worship Me with Lizzo. And right next to me on the sofa is Martin Seeger. Hello, welcome. Lizzo's got to go. Hello. Hello. Tell us all about Ashburton Art Centre and the string quartet and the music you've written.
Well, yes, I mean, they're doing a fantastic festival this week, the Chamber Music Festival, where they have a full string quartet and a flute player. And they're playing things many evenings and daytimes all week. So anyway, I turned up on the first one, which was last Thursday, at a wonderful place, Biggerton Cottage. And they were sort of accepting bits of music from anywhere and anywhere and anyone. And so they're doing the same again on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday. So I'm actually taking along a bit of my own string quartet, my brand new string quartet, which I'm just in the throes of. Basically, I've only spent a few weeks on it. It's no way finished yet, but I've got some ideas from it, which they're going to play.
Brilliant.
That would be nice. And it's at a private residence in Ashburton, again, being hosted there. So that's going to be great fun. I'm working on a new quartet based on the River Dart. So I'm using that as the kind of theme and centrepiece of the piece, going from Dartmoor all the way down to Dartmouth. But it's really good. I mean, what I recommend to everyone to get to this Chamber Music Festival. They're doing gigs from Wednesday every night through Saturday night. They've had a few already at the weekend. But I really would recommend it. It's really good fun and really good music.
Oh, well, thank you so much for coming on. And isn't Andy Williamson, he gets my applause. Yeah. I mean,
the man never seems to stop.
No, I mean, he does not stop. And he, God knows what incredible time he gets home at night.
I know. I don't know how he does it.
But they're both very creative, Susie and Andy. So, do get out there.
Definitely
and
recommend
Martin Seeger,
that.
Thank you so much for coming on our programme today. And next up is Mr. Steve Nair, but we'll have a bit of musica.
Hey, boy, what you say, boy? You trying to play coy like a Game Boy? Hit my phone, boy. Is your homeboy? Are you a lone boy? Come give me dome, boy. Got a boy with degrees, a boy in the streets, a boy on his knees, he a man in the sheets. Sheesh, it's all Greek to me. Got this boy speaking Spanish. Aye, puppy. Baby, I don't need you. I just wanna freak you. I heard you a freak too. What's 2 + 2? Mississippi boys, inner city boys. I like the pretty boys with the bow tie. Get your nails did, let it blow dry. I like a big beard, I like a clean face. I don't discriminate, come and get a taste. From the playboys to the gay boys. Go and slay boys, you my fake boys.
Baby, I don't need you. I don't need you. I just wanna freak you.
A little bit of Lizzie and boys. Who knows, I'm baking hot in this room. I said it was cool, but it's not. I need that bucket of water around my feet. The one that Sophie's got. Okay, it's time to ring Mr. Stephen Nair, who's just come back from Mauritius teaching art in that glamorous place. For goodness sake, I need a job like that, please. I'm in the front room without my bucket of water. For goodness sake. Okay, right, time to be sensible. Well, not that sensible. A tad sensible. Here we are. He's only down the road. I just like the ringing out.
Hello?
Mr. Steve Nair, Wildlife Artist of the Year in Totnes and the World. How are you? How was Mauritius?
Mauritius was great, thanks, Julie.
I flagged it up because it's so such a glamorous location. How did you get this gig?
I don't know. I mean, it's about 4 or 5 years ago now, and I kind of... it's like most things that happen to me. It always feels like I got in through the back door. But they keep asking me back, which is good news. And I'm going back again in April, which is even better news, because this time it was their winter and I've just got back. So I would recommend, if people aren't coping with the heat at the moment, that they go off to Mauritius, because it's not as hot there.
And it's only round the corner, isn't it?
Literally. I mean, we're only talking about 11 hours flight from here.
God, 11 hours. Okay, 11 hours of bliss. Now, tell me about what sort of teaching is involved. I mean, obviously, your pictures, your paintings are absolutely stunning. How on earth do you convey how you make this art to your students? Or what's the point of... What's your kind of assignment tasked?
Well, I don't expect the students to be trying to emulate my kind of work, but I'm taking them through the basics of how to use oil paints and paint their own, using their own style, because I don't want anyone to change the way that is familiar to them. But at the same time, I do want to teach them how to use oil paints and how to be comfortable using them. And I take them through on a step-by-step basis, and we just go through it all that way. In April, it's going to be quite a special one, because it is specifically to raise funds for Animals Asia. Mm-hmm. And so we're all going to be painting moon bears.
Wow.
And... yeah, I mean, the plan is that there is someone who is quite well known, well, very well known actor, who's going to be attending my workshop, who does a lot of work with Animals Asia, and probably they're going to bring another celebrity along with them on the workshop. And then the plan is that we auction whatever painting I do, and probably theirs, to be honest, and they'll sign my painting, and we'll auction and raise money for Animals Asia that way.
That's absolutely fantastic. Can you name names, or are you bound by secrecy?
I'm a little bit cautious.
Yeah, don't worry.
Names at this stage,
of course,
on the radio. But,
yeah.
If you go to the Animals Asia website, it's worth having a look at the work they do, and just have a look at the celebrities and ambassadors and people like that, and they'll give you an idea of who might be going.
Well, it sounds absolutely fantastic, Stephen. It's just brilliant that you do this, that you fly out 11 hours to Mauritius. To teach students about oil. How did you actually, where did you learn how to use oil paints yourself?
Oh, that's a good question. I've been using paints for most of my life, to be honest. I went to art college a long, long time ago, although they never really taught me how to use oils. I think a lot of it is just, I don't know, talking to other artists, seeing what they were doing, just finding out, you know, just a lot of it's self-taught, but you learn, and you learn through experience too. I mean, I've been doing this a while now, and I think there's no substitute for just doing, actually getting there and using the paints and learning. I mean, obviously you make a lot of mistakes, but then there's people out there who will help you.
Yeah. And what's your kind of relationship with oil compared to, say, acrylics or mixed media inks and stuff like that? What's your actual preference?
I used to use acrylic once upon a time, when I first started out. And they're okay. I mean, that's all I would say. They do a job. They're okay. I actually much, much prefer oils, because just they suit my method of working much better. They don't dry too quickly. I don't like the plasticky finish that acrylics dry to. I like something that I can build up in layers, and I like something that has oils. I always feel like have a deeper I don't know. They seem to have a better colour to them than acrylic, but that's just my personal bias. Also, the other thing is that I now use water-based oils. And water-based oils, in some ways, it sounds a bit of a misnomer, but actually they are still oil paints. But instead of using harmful liquids like turpentine and so on, which should be banned, you use water, so it's not harmful to the environment. And so I use those, and I get on very well with them.
That's really excellent, Steve. Can you just tell us about your website, so anyone listening to this program gets an idea how they can actually look at your work and find out where you're exhibiting and all that sort of thing?
Okay, so my website, which I have to say does need updating, is nyeartist.com. So it's we've had a little bit of a dog drama going on here.
We've had a dog drama too. I think it's the heat.
I know. I'm sorry about this. You see,
yeah, don't worry.
Animal lovers living with animals. It's never a good mixture. But nyeartist is nayartist.com. That's my website, nyeartist.com. And the other way you can find me is on Instagram. And again, it's at nyeartist. So they're probably the two best ways, along with Facebook, same handle.
Brilliant. Is it easy, once you've made a painting, and maybe you obviously have a relationship with that painting, a connection, a very strong connection with that animal, is it easy for you to let go and for people to buy them? Or do you get emotionally attached to them? How does that all work?
I like to get emotionally attached to them. In fact, I prefer it when I can hang the painting up and spend some time with it before it goes off, before it's sold. I used to feel that attachment where I didn't want to let them go. I don't feel that at all now.
That's
because
good. Yeah.
What's more important is the work. So what's more important? And also I feel that if I've achieved something once, I can achieve it again and probably do it better. So there's no need to get attached.
No.
And the whole point is that I'm trying to raise funds for conservation organisations. So there's a logic behind it that goes beyond personal attachments, really.
Yeah, I understand. So if people sort of locally in Devon wanted to actually see your work, where would you direct them?
Well, I used to have a studio until recently. but I've given that up for various reasons. So now, at the moment, I'm working from home whilst I'm trying to sort out where I might find another studio. Studios are not that easy to find.
They're not
in around Totnes, to be honest. And there needs to be more. There need to be, I mean, if anyone's listening from the council or anyone who has some clout on this, there need to be more places for artists to work, because there are so many artists and they just can't find places to work. And I'm one of them now, so I'll bear that in mind. But the other thing is...
You've got Coombe Gallery there behind you.
Sorry?
But they could go to Coombe Gallery and see your work.
They could go to Coombe Gallery if he happens to have any up at the moment. He does have some paintings of mine, but whether they're up on the walls, obviously I share that space with other artists, so they're not always up.
Okay.
But he probably has got a few of my paintings. And so pop along to Coombe Gallery in Dartmouth.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, because it's always worth knowing about that, isn't it? Because that's an amazing gallery and highly prestigious gallery, and you're connected with them and he sells your work. So anyone listening out there, you want to see Steve's work in real life, there's always there. Or contact him from the Instagram page or website.
Exactly.
Well, yeah. I'm very jealous of your trips to Mauritius, I have to say. But you've been fantastic coming on the on our 102.5 FM Sound Art Radio. Thank you, Steve Nyer. And I hope you've got your feet in a bucket of ice water, because I think it's a really good idea to do that.
Yeah, I've got shorts on. That's just as good.
Okay. Thank you so much for coming on the programme. Take good care.
All right. No worries.
Bye.
Thanks,
bye, Steve. Bye. Mr. Steve Nyer. And seriously, his art is totally and utterly sensational. What a mix today. We have had Sophie Hexheimer performing her poetry, telling us about her art and the course on the 14th of August down the way at the Albatross, that's turning into a creative venue. Hooray! We've had Mr. Martin Seeger, whose debut is at the Ashburton Art Centre this Wednesday. He's written a piece for a string quartet. Wow, get out there. And also, we've had Witch Wench from Totnes, as interviewed by our roving reporter, Sarah Louise Connolly. I think we need the Voodoo Orchestra, do you?
Yeah, come on, bring it on.
Stay tuned, we've got Alex Marsh and Tracy Guineas coming on next on The Sofa. See you next week.